This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
All right, we got some interesting stuff coming up in this segment here on Tech Talks. If you're new to Tech Talks, thanks for joining us this week here on Tech Talks.
That's right, because on Tech Talks, we just love saying the word Tech Talks. Every other time we can say the word Tech Talks. It's sort of our thing here on Tech Talks.
I'm Grant.
And I'm Mitch.
And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be here mixing in music along with everything that you need to know that's happening in technology from week to week. We try to keep you updated, being Lexington's native technology news here in town.
That's right, the only one. And we will also be having the amazing comic relief of the byplay between myself and Grant, also available to you free of charge on the show. How wonderful. What a special deal. Anyways, so, Grant, I believe we have some stuff.
Yeah, we do. So, one of the first ones that I wanted to get to, and this is a fairly brief one in and of itself, but Facebook has rolled out a feature this month in which you can now communicate directly with certain businesses, and those businesses don't have a human sitting on the other end of it. So, for example, if you're on Facebook or you're on Messenger and you send a message to us here at Tech Talks, it will be Mitch or I who see that and, you know, we'll review it in person and send you a message back. But unless
we don't like you, in which case we may ignore it.
But a number of groups, including eBay, HP, Disney, CNN, The Wall Street Journal, and Poncho, which is a weather app, all now have natively running AIs on Facebook so that when you message them through this particular service, it'll be a robot that responds rather than a human. And we put this to the test and ended up with some interesting results.
That's right. Grant, take it away, even more than you already have.
So I started out and I sent a message to Poncho. Yeah, you can find it on Messenger. It's actually called Hi Poncho, but you can just search Poncho. And I said, "Hey Poncho, what's the chance of rain tomorrow in Lexington?" Poncho took a second, and it was weird to me because it had the little dot 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 thing that it does, as though it were actually typing back a message to me. And it sat there for a second or two, and then it responded in kind of a strange way. It said, "Why don't you tell me where you are? I need to know so I can give you the forecast. If you're on a phone, you can just send me your location." So I told it Lexington, and astutely enough, it realized it was actually talking about Lexington, Kentucky. So it said, I told it, "Yes, that's the location I want." And then it asked me a couple of questions about automating. And to be honest, this was a little tedious the first time that I did it, but it was a very brief and painless process, all things considered. I elected not to sign up for the 8 a.m. forecast or the 6 p.m. forecasts or the pollen sensitivity warnings. But after that, it said, "Thanks. Feel free to ask me if you need anything."
Thanks, man.
So then I messaged. I tried again with my original intent. I said, "What's the chance of rain tomorrow?" And like any good AI system, it responded, "No, it's great." What a non sequitur there, and yet somehow I still understood what it was trying to convey. I think it was saying there's no chance of rain, but I'm still not quite clear on that. So then I followed up, and I said, "What's the high temperature for tomorrow?" And sure enough, it caught on to what I was going for. The weather tomorrow in Lexington will be clear, 74 degrees high, 47 degrees low. So then I'm thinking, what's the next thing I can try out? What's the weather for Friday? The weather in Friday, Texas is 73 degrees and clear.
So is Friday like a holiday in that town? Hey,
I don't know.
It's Friday in Friday.
But one of the things that gets me about that is AI are like genies in those whimsical stories. They take everything way, way too literally. And you have to be incredibly careful with how you craft your sentences. So then I'm thinking, I've just messed up here, right? So what's the weather for Friday in Lexington? And that just confused it. That confused it to death. It had no idea what I was trying to do. So I ended up giving up, and that was pretty much the end of the adventure. Unfortunately, it's not very smart with giving me, like, the following day of the week, but I can always ask about tomorrow's weather. So overall, it was an interesting experience. I feel like I definitely got to try something out, and it gives me both an appreciation that, yes, it did technically work, but it's also somewhat crude, I suppose. I don't know. It was interesting to see. It was interesting to witness. And they're actually rolling out a whole slew of APIs for this. So I think we're going to see a lot of companies embrace this as a format of quick response that can be taken on. And so then I had another thought. I've sat here and messaged back and forth with Poncho for like 4 or 5 minutes now. And I've gotten a very small amount of persistent information, and it takes me how long to type in the word weather into Google, and I'm done. Like that was maybe 3 seconds, and I already know more information than Poncho gave me.
Oh yeah.
So I think the lesson here is that the key to this is automation. If an 8 a.m. daily forecast is something that you want, I can see where the use of that coming in the form of a message overnight is useful. But otherwise, I don't know. And if it's only at 8 a.m., I would have to question the usefulness of that. I'd like to be able to customize that so it's at 6 a.m., so I know it's actually already in my inbox by the time that I get up. But beggars can't be choosers. And yeah, so that was my experience with chatting up an AI on Facebook. It was pretty strange, honestly. It was Poncho is interesting in its robotic naivety, so to say, that it really gets tripped up by really, really small things sometimes, and I find that kind of fun, actually. It's not often that you're able to have a conversation like this with such a crude machine, you know.
Yep, we've sort of gone past already the point of crude machinery to where everything more or less is a system of refinement at the moment. And it's funny that you're enjoying talking to a less intelligent machine and enjoying the responses it's giving you for being wrong, yet when you talk to someone like Siri and you expect its responses to be robust like Siri is supposed to be, you get really, really frustrated as a person, you know, all of us do.
I think because there's this expectation that Siri will become more robust. You know, there's this natural inclination that things get smarter over time. And, you know, the level of standards I'm going to hold a chatbot weather app to, you know, a whole fledgling of something underlying an operating system, it's a little bit different, but...
Well, yeah. It's still funny to see, though.
It was. Oh, don't get me wrong. It was very funny.
Well, folks, with that, we are most likely ready for a music break already. 15 minutes gone like that.
Yeah, wow. Coming up for this next segment, Microsoft is taking another stab at image classification. Recently, Microsoft has attempted to guess your age, find a celebrity look-alike, or classify pictures of dog breeds. But what they're going at right now is the most generalized format of this that we've seen so far, and it's called CaptionBot.
CaptionBot, he inquires curiously?
Yeah, CaptionBot. So CaptionBot, you give it an image, and it gives you back a caption of what it thinks this image contains. So, for example, it was given an image of a golden retriever standing in a backyard. and it described it as a dog standing on top of a grass-covered field. It was a pretty good description.
Fair description, yeah.
And I think especially given the look of this image, you'd agree that's a pretty good description.
That's a decently large backyard. I would say that backyard is bordering on field size.
Field-like, yeah.
At what point is your backyard a backfield?
Somebody took a picture of a Microsoft Surface propped up in the open position with the keyboard attached, and the service of CaptionBot said, "I think it's a laptop. I think it's an open laptop computer sitting on a table," which again is a good description of what it's doing. The bot refuses to caption any images it
obscene.
Thinks are inappropriate. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. They must have learned, saw what happened with Pi, and were like, yeah, let's not add that feature.
Yeah, yeah. There seemed to be a handful more of protocols in this to keep this system from getting off the rails, as they so recently and so painfully learned with Tay. But anyways, it's an interesting merge of a lot of different pieces coming together. It's Bing image search combined with what Microsoft bids computer vision. Combined
computer vision.
With a kind of API that they call the Emotion API. All of which combined together help recognize people, objects, and images, and then identify them to give you the description.
Computer vision.
The only other service I've seen that does something similar to this is Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram is working on an image identification project. And so if you throw out a picture of, say, some peaches right here, it goes so far as to specifically say that those peaches are Japanese persimmons.
Oh my.
So it's incredibly precise, but it has a tendency to miss the forest for the trees, so to say.
Like, so now I'm just wondering how many times I've eaten peaches in my life and actually been eating Japanese persimmons.
But you see where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting to see two separate approaches.
It's going into such detail that you might get confused.
That golden retriever photo I showed you a minute ago, image identify from Wolfram Alpha identifies as, the sole description it gives is a golden retriever. So you see where it's kind of missing the forest for the trees. A dog in a grass-covered field versus
the what kind of dog? I mean, it's focusing on. I'd say the focus of the picture is what
it is, and that's definitely
and
true.
And then the caption this is focusing more on the context of the picture.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting though, this separation between context and strictly identifying something happening. You know,
it's interesting to say the least.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's interesting to see these separate approaches and these separate systems that have come to live here and have come to life this year. Certainly something I think we'll be checking in on again.
Most assuredly. Wow, we have 5 minutes left. What's a nice little topic?
Quick update. That expandable inflatable habitat getting installed on Saturday. So that's a quick follow-up to a couple weeks ago talking about the habitat being going up. It's up there, and it's going to get installed on Saturday at 2 a.m.
Our next segment from 7:15 to 7:30, stay tuned for the next segment because we will have to talk about SpaceX. They finally landed one on the barge and didn't blow everything up.
Oh, on the barge.
Yeah,
nice.
We will have to talk about that from 6:15 to 7:30, because I feel like we can take a good 15-minute chunk and set aside for just
probably
that. So, folks, we had an interesting call over the break. It was a sort of an expansion on our, or I guess a theory on what all of the Facebook things we were talking about at the beginning are sort of leading towards.
Honestly, I think he had a really good point there, because I hadn't really thought about it in this holistic kind of way. But when you look at the F8 Facebook conference holistically this week, what did they hit on hardest? Robotic automated integration with Facebook as a platform to provide services and to sell goods. That was the first big thing. The second big thing was making it easier for groups and businesses to interact on Facebook. Third was hitting hard talking about Oculus. Fourth was hitting hard talking about their new 3D cameras and being able to integrate all this together. And really, I hadn't thought about it this way, but you made a really good point in that when you take it holistically, you're looking at a virtual marketplace.
Yep.
And
so
I think
if you've seen the episode of Futurama where they plug themselves more or less into the internet and go internet shopping, and it's a virtual reality with a bunch of malls and things. One of them was Kid Napster was a joke that they sort of snuck in there of the old CD torrenting Napster service, sort of like LimeWire and whatnot. And it's kind of interesting because I could totally see our online shopping experiences going that way. Because I know I personally like to pick something up and look at it before I buy it. So if you can virtually pick up and look at an object.
Yeah. I mean, if they
before you purchase it, you know.
Honestly, I would be cool with buying stuff off of even something like, I don't know, I'd be cool with buying stuff off the internet, getting my furniture off IKEA, if I could first put on a set of goggles and walk around this dresser and look at it fully assembled, you know? Something like that, I think, is where there's a lot of opportunity here to see and kind of interact with goods in a way that we haven't been able to do previously in the comfort of our own homes. And that's definitely something that Facebook was pointed towards. And so I'm excited to see
where that leads, you know? Yeah, and I know that personally, I just wish that we weren't going away. I actually like the physical getting out and going shopping.
I do too.
You know, and sometimes. At least in it would make Black Friday shopping so much safer too, is the other thing. But
if I don't get out at 3 a.m. and deck somebody over a waffle iron, what am I really doing on Black Friday?
Or trampling a Walmart employee.
Yeah.
You know. I feel like you get too much enjoyment out of beating people with waffle irons. This isn't the first time it's happened, folks.
No comment.
What you don't know is he has a waffle iron right now. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it is currently 7:00 in the evening, halfway through tuning in and teching out with us here at Tech Talks on WRFL Lexington, you are tuned in currently. So, with that, I believe it's time for some music. And what music we have up for you next? We have Kingsborough, followed by Lapsley, followed by Rabbit Wild, and then Kingsborough.
Okay.
Started at the back of the list and wanted to work my way the other way.
All right.
So, with that, keep it locked and enjoy.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Back already indeed. Wow, that was fast.
It just seems like our show's been progressively speeding up as you all have been tuned in. It's now time to tech out. And this 15-minute segment, I'm sure, is going to go by like I snap my fingers for those you were not here. Very fast is the point. I'm going to go very fast. What we're going to talk about, though, is something that we've sort of been following ever since it began, and it's been going on for well over a year and a half now, and that is SpaceX and their attempt to launch a rocket into space and have it land safely so that it can be reused. They have tried and failed about, what, 5 times now?
I think this was attempt number 5.
Well, this attempt, the 5th attempt, is the one that worked. We finally have seen SpaceX launch a rocket into space and it return to the ground intact, ready to be reused again.
And, well, to qualify that, it's the first time they've landed on the barge. They did land on the ground a couple months ago out in the desert, but this is the first time that they have landed on a barge, which I feel like is a different game altogether, because your ability to land it on an object that is mobile is a lot more impressive than just landing it out in the desert, because then at some point somebody has to drive a crane out in the desert to go get that barge, or to go get the rocket.
Yep, barge in a desert.
But on a barge, you can just take it into shore and...
thing straight to Cape Canaveral.
Yeah. I feel like the overhead for getting something back is a lot lower when you're able to land on a barge. And I think it opens up flexibility, because you think about how many space missions we've done where we've had to at some point reroute, and there's maybe 20 places in the world that are ready at the drop of a hat to land a space shuttle, and that's not a tremendous number of places, but the idea that you could have a barge or a small fleet of barges that could be virtually anywhere in the ocean within a day's time to catch and reclaim a rocket is incredible to me, and so that's pretty exciting that they've managed to do that, that they've managed to really actually, you know, land on a barge. I'm impressed.
That makes two of us. I would like to see how well that rocket now does upon a second re-entry and a second launch, to see how, you know, obviously we have a pretty decent idea of what the most, I guess, the weakest components that we would be using on a spacecraft will be, but I'm very curious to see about structural stresses on the craft itself, to see how many entries and escape velocities it can handle.
And this is fundamentally just an engineering problem, because we've been reusing those space shuttles, some of them for a decade or more, you know? So this is not anything new in that field. We've definitely been entering and re-exiting with the same craft before. It's just, in this particular case, how does SpaceX hold up? Because
especially, we've grounded the space shuttles, in all honesty.
Formally. Yeah, they've been grounded for a couple years now.
Decade, I'd say.
Not quite.
Very close, I would say. I'd say the last time we did a manned space flight using a space shuttle was probably...
The last space shuttle launch was STS-135, which occurred, surprise, this is so hard to look up, 2011. Four years, 9 months, 6 days ago.
4 years, okay. But what was it before that, if you can see behind that?
Prior to 135, so STS-134.
Mm-hmm.
134 happened in May of 2011.
Well, I stand corrected.
Now, to be fair, they did taper off quite a bit there towards the end, but that project's been shelved for over 5 years now. That's pretty wild to me. Think about.
You know, and those space shuttles were basically, you know, they're your stereotypical rocket that you see. A giant orange tube with a black and white shuttle mounted onto it that, as it goes up into atmosphere, it breaks pieces off. And then as it comes into atmosphere, that shuttle is actually designed to be aerodynamic like a plane, so that on reentry, the crew will just fly it down like an airplane and land on a landing strip. You know, so
yeah. It comes down and lands like a standard plane.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to see the upright landing, and it changes the game a little bit.
Especially because if you remember your stereotypical, you know, space fleet type ships, they'll have rockets mounted on them and they'll land, you know, on all fours, for lack of a better term. And you know, they have always had the ability to launch on all fours and then tilt up and then launch, you know, continue their ascent. And now if we could get, you know, four or so, you know, of those rockets onto a decent sized shuttle, you know, you're going to have something that is a true shuttle. It doesn't need a giant rocket and a huge launch crew. I mean, it's just going to have four built-in rockets on it. And you just, you know, lift off like a helicopter would and angle yourself up and then, you know, kick the afterburner and up into space you go.
Yeah, yeah. And so one of the things that I find really interesting about this is, I'm not sure if this is the case, but if it is fundamentally the same logic to landing on Mars or the moon as it is landing on Earth, then really all they need to do is retool their sensors to, say, expect this kind of gravity, moon-worthy gravity or Mars-worthy gravity, and then it'll land upright like a...
Because we actually have very accurate calculations for the gravity on Mars and the moon, as well as actual sensor readings.
Yeah. And so the idea there is, I mean, if you can land on virtually any planet in an upright position using the same kind of math, then that changes the game as to how you land and leave. Because if you can land upright and then just take back off again and not have to reorient and just refuel when you hit the ground... It's exactly the huge, huge hurdle they had to face in the lunar landings. And so it's exciting to see that this works so well.
Yep. It definitely was a scary day whenever they tried to do the lunar landings, because if they were going just a couple miles an hour faster than what they were, they would have squished themselves on the surface of the moon.
Yeah, I mean that sounds pretty trivial when you're talking about a distance that is hundreds of thousands of miles, but the idea that you could be off relative to the moving or spinning of the moon by even just, you know, 10 or 15 miles an hour could be devastating to the way that you land. Because if you're spinning relative to the planet at an extra 15 miles an hour and you shear when you hit sideways, or if you're coming in too fast, or even, and this sounds weird, you're coming in too slow on your descent, that can be a problem too, because you'll end up using extra fuel. So it's just impressive that they've really consistently gotten it down now. And I think as much flack as we gave them early on, it really just took a couple trial runs, and SpaceX figured out what they were
and some
what they were
expensive
going for.
Rockets. Which then again, you can't land a space rocket without blowing a few up.
Yeah.
Just like you can't make an omelet without breaking some space fuel.
Okay, yeah. that's how that idiom goes. And
isn't it, though?
I mean, but you think about it, that's definitely what we did in the 50s, is we just sort of put stuff up there and...
did this break? Nope.
Fall back down and figured out how to make it fall more precisely, basically. That's what early reentry was.
We perfected the art of throwing a really big rock up into the atmosphere and having it land
exactly where we wanted it. And by exactly where I wanted it, I mean vaguely somewhere out in the Pacific. And then we just strapped a homing beacon on it and found it later.
Or not.
Don't act like that's exactly how we retrieved those early rockets and the early rockets with people in them too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they would just bloop into the Pacific Ocean and we'd race out and get them.
Sure would. Well, that was a fun article.
We have 5 minutes.
We do.
Well,
this coming from IEEE, nanophotonic technology, which is incredibly fun to say. Say it with me.
Nanophotonic
technology. It's fun. It's very, very fun to say. Mm-hmm. But there's been some research done, and they're calling it nanophotonic technology, and it is an area of trying to develop these incredibly small photovoltaic sensors. It's sort of like, imagine if... And solar panels have been coming down steadily in price, and usually solar panels are made out of lower quality silicon than what would be acceptable to put into an integrated circuit, or what would be acceptable to put into your computer, or what would be acceptable to use in a camera. But somebody has raised the question, what if we used camera quality silicon to make our solar panels? And the answer is, they're tremendously more efficient. Energy increases for single junction solar panels can rise by up to 40% and higher, and can be done cost effectively. Which is, honestly, the kind of issue that solar panels have been fighting against for so long. But, you know, once you're seeing the potential for another 30-40% increase, energy density-wise, a lot of solar panels take in energy and then just radiate it back out. But the idea is, if we can really craft, both from a materials perspective and from an electrical perspective, something that truly captures all of the energy there, we can theoretically up to triple the amount of energy that you get out of a solar panel, which is pretty wild to me. Actually, you know, I was probably underselling it there with the triple. I think the number stands right now at about 20%, so maybe about 5x five times the amount of power that you could theoretically get out of it. And that's a big jump. And so the idea is that these nanophotonics might be able to play a role in it. It's a really exciting field that's just now coming to fruition. So hopefully we'll get to follow up with some stories on that, because that is an exciting opportunity for energy.
Most assuredly. So with that, the time is 7:28. We're going to pop off this 15-minute segment just a couple minutes early and get back to some music. And we will join you probably, instead of at 7:45, 7:50. We'll do a short little 5-minute closeout segment. Something like that. So, with that, everyone, keep it locked all the way to the left here at WRFL Lexington. You're on the alternative left on the radio stereo dial. Yeah? Okay. Well, look at that. Look at the time. Would you look at the time? Hello.
Oh.
Hi.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
You were talking to me.
Yeah. I'm also talking to our listeners.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he needs to be experienced in surround sound.
Yeah, that's right, actually. I find that my voice is better coming from both ends of your stereo radio simultaneously.
That's right. But anywho, our time is up. Alas, we're done. And I would say our show here was one.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. Wow, with the harsh light over there.
Yeah, the party panda just turned on the harsh light. Gosh, what a party killer.
Oh.
But that's okay, because he has 2 whole hours to make it up right after we get off of here. So we're going to leave you with some Treehouse as we leave, just to sort of set the mood for the party that's coming, as it does every week with the Party Panda Power Hour.
Yeah!
Early edition with the Bell Squad.
Early.
Yep. So with that, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you all next Thursday as you come to tune in and tech out with us here on Tech Talks.
All right. See you guys next week.